This is episode 460 of Wheel Bearings. I am Sam Abul Samad from Telemetry.
I am Nicole.
Can't speak today.
You're having a rough start, Sam.
Oh, okay. I'm Roberto Baldwin from SAE International. There you go. Easy
there
peasy.
We go.
All right. Nicole, what have you been driving? Well, actually, first of all, did everybody have a good holiday weekend? Which is why we're late, by the way, because you know it's 4th of July.
I did. I went to Washington, D.C., and it was fantastic.
So were you one of the three people that was wandering around the mall?
There were actually, the mall was really crowded. Honest to goodness, there was a ton of people. It was very, very crowded. We were there kind of early, and then we went to watch the fireworks from the roof of Russ's office. So we left, but then there were almost like 500,000 at one point, and they evacuated because of the weather, and then not everybody could get back in. So they had somewhere around like 150,000 that were actually inside, but then it was cool. People were all over the city watching it because it kind of screwed things up. So on street corners and, you know, rooftops and everywhere, it was actually really kind of cool. It was really neat. I was glad I was there.
Okay. Did you see the melting arch?
The melting arch?
Yeah. The plywood and tarp model of the triumphal arch that they want to build that was kind of falling apart.
Oh, I didn't see an arch that was falling apart. I saw an arch that was fine. And I don't know if there was an arch. Is that what that was supposed to be? It didn't look like it was falling apart. It just looked like an arch.
The pictures that people posted online
it was white with the gold.
Yeah, showed the caulking oozing out from between some of the parts.
And, oh, I don't know. I didn't like walk right up to it, but it looked fine when I walked by. So,
all right, Well, let's carry on with the show then.
Okay.
What have you been driving, Nicole?
I drove very briefly because I was out of town for a good chunk of last week. I drove the 2026 Ford F-350 Super Duty King Ranch FX4 off-road.
Oh, so tired already.
I know.
Too much name.
Too much name. So it's really weird, honestly, for me to drive a Super Duty truck, especially it's not even like it's an F-250, F-350. Let's just go all out. I don't drive trucks like this. I have no need for a truck like this. This is such a very specific little group of people who will go all the way to an F-350 Super Duty King Ranch with the FX4 off-road package. So it feels big. It feels loud. It feels like a truck. I literally said to Russ, so this is the best thing, though. My fleet company had said to me, you're getting an XC60 this week. And I said, okay, like the day before it was supposed to get that car. And Russ looks out the window. He goes, that's a weird looking Volvo. I'm like, what? I'm like, that in fact is not a Volvo. What the heck is that? So they get a little confused. I was like, that is not what I was expecting the last 24 hours. So this is, it's big. It's just really big. It starts at, gosh, the King Ranch. And I didn't have a Monroney, and it's so hard to build trucks out. But the King Ranch starts at $79,000 before you add on higher output engines and the fact that this was, you know, had the off-road package. This is an expensive truck. And it has a 6.7-liter high output power stroke V8 turbo diesel, which is 500 horsepower and 1,200 pound-feet of torque. So this is for heavy-duty towing. Like really, 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 really heavy duty towing. There's no reason on earth anybody would buy this unless they have to tow stuff all day, every day. I just don't understand why anyone would get it. So it's very
limited. And yet people do it anyway.
People do it anyway. I felt like I pulled up next to just like a regular old F-150 and I'm like, wow, when you're looking down at an F-150, you were in something big. So so it wasn't that I disliked it. It's just, it's very hard to evaluate this because it's so single-minded in its purpose. You know, if you're doing heavy-duty towing and stuff, this is the kind of truck that you want to get. I love the diesel engine in this. And I double-checked before the show started because I thought, wait a minute, which engine did I have? But there was a diesel engine thing in trucks where it's like loud and obnoxious. And then there's a diesel engine and trucks are just like, I'm a diesel, just so you know. That's what this one was. It's not obnoxiously loud. I heard it when they started it up to take it away this morning, but it wasn't one of those, like, I heard it when they started it up and the entire house vibrated with the sound of it. So that was a good test as to how calm and quiet this engine is. You don't know it's a diesel while you're driving it. You really don't hear the diesel engine. And I always think of diesels being noisy, especially on something this big. And the King Ranch, this is the fanciest of all. It's just so fancy. It has so much detail on it. It looks a little bit like you should be wearing cowboy boots and a cowboy hat the whole time. And the little logo looks like a W. So I always think of any King Ranch as the Wakeland edition. so because it looks like a W. I feel like I was going to buy it.
Yeah, the King Ranch brand does look like a W. Which
doesn't it look like a W?
Odd, but,
it's really the Wakeland edition, Ford F-350 Wakeland. So this is, you know, it's just... so big. It's so powerful. Now, it was nice to drive. It was surprisingly, and it was dually, like you've got, it's crazy. So it's just like, what am I going to do with this? How am I going to test this?
Well, there's what you could have done was, you know, chain it to your house and drag your house to DC.
Yank
so you'd have
off.
Some place to stay. You wouldn't need to get a hotel. You just drag the house to DC.
Save you money.
Yeah.
Who needs a hotel? I can just park this right up on the mall. So it's hard for me. I feel really, I can say the things that it does, that it has, you know, the high payload, that it has the high tow rating, that it has the high output turbo diesel, that the King Ranch makes it really very fancy inside. It's a truck that does work, that doesn't feel like you should be doing work in it because it's so nice inside. But in terms of really using it, it's hard to evaluate it because I will never use this the way the person who's really looking at this kind of truck will use it. I am not towing that kind of stuff or doing that. So that makes it a little tough. It was easy to drive for a truck this big. I did have to park. I never pulled it into an actual parking space between two other vehicles because I wanted to leave both of those vehicles the way they were when I found them. So I chose instead to park where there was no vehicles because even it's so big. There were some parking lots I pulled into. And I'm right at the edge, like, and I can see I am smack in that parking space and my butt is still sticking out into traffic. Like, it's gigantic. So if you want a gigantic truck that you are actually going to be doing real work in, this would be a great choice. And, you know, it has that 12 inch center touchscreen. You have a big touchscreen, got charging ports, you got Apple CarPlay, you've got all the bells and whistles and that really beautiful interior. It is incredibly comfortable. But I feel like it's a tough one to review because I can't do it justice because I don't drive this kind of truck.
If Ford wants to send me one, I'll take one and take it up to my uncle's ranch where he has like trailers for horses
there you
and
go.
Cattle. And
That's really who should be getting this. Like, clang, I have the opportunity to drive it, but it's still, you guys.
I think he has an F-250. I think he actually has a Super Duty. Yeah, he doesn't have as big as a 350.
You could have gone and picked up a few bags of mulch.
I could have picked up a couple.
Throw it in the back, and then you can't get to it. It's so far forward.
It'll get so far forward, I'll have to be like crawling into the back of the bed to get it out when it slides all the way against the cab. I think that it would be a great choice for someone who is looking for a truck that has that capability, has a little off-road package in there, but also for the interior if you want something that's luxurious. Like the King Ranch really is beautiful inside, which is sort of they don't feel like they should match. You can do incredibly heavy-duty truck stuff with this, and yet you get inside and it sort of coddles you, which is a neat space to be in, that it really is that capable and that comfortable. So overall, I liked it. My assessment is large.
Big.
Have you ever been sent an F-450 dually?
No.
Are you lucky? Because if you think this is big, having the dual wheel rear axle really makes it challenging to go anywhere.
This was a dually. I mean, this was a 350, but it was a dually. I was just
dually too.
Yes.
Did they think you had like a fifth wheel just hanging around your house or?
I have no idea. That's just like, how did I get this? Like again,
you know what?
driving.
Nicole's going to be dragging like half of a mobile home across the state. We should probably send her a 350 dually.
Right? Did they get like, did they get a little confused? I don't know what happened. So, yeah. So it was huge. It was huge. And it's expensive. And yeah, it's ridiculously big. I do have the destination fee because I just have it, you know, overall for the, I want to take a guess.
$2,500. $2,795.
Robbie wins $2,195.
So much money.
No, that's not right.
That's what it says.
Doesn't seem enough, to be honest.
On the Ford website or on?
I had pulled it from, wait, did I mean, it's conceivable. I pulled it wrong. Let me go look. Let me go look right now.
Don't try to steal my thunder, Sam.
It's just because he lost. No, let's see. Ford trucks.
Super duty.
My internet's that fast. Super duty.
Building prize.
Building prize. Who's going to get their first? Who's going to get their first? It's probably cooperating. Oh, that didn't do what I wanted to do. I've had internet fail. Oh, it's not working. Literally, the site won't load for me. I'm getting like code.
Let's see. Yeah, $27.95.
Oh, $27.95. Where did it get $21.95?
It used to be $21.95, but that was last year.
Oh, maybe I accidentally clicked on 25 when I pulled it. That's conceivable.
Oh my gosh.
Because they just raised it about a month ago from $25.95 to $27.95.
$27.90. Sorry, Robbie. $27.95?
Yep.
That's a lot.
I mean, it is a lot of trucks.
Expensive. To be fair, you know, shipping a dual wheel rear axle, long bed, Super Duty from Louisville to anywhere is going to be an expensive proposition.
I mean, a few times you can look at it and say, not completely unwarranted. It's more average because shipping this thing is not going to be cheap. Yeah. So there you go. So that's the Ford F-350 Super Duty King Ranch FX4 off-road with
Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. We've updated the Wheel Bearings merch store, and now there's a whole bunch of new choices, new colors, new styles, t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, hats, mugs, travel mugs, stickers, aprons, tote bags, you name it. You can get your Wheel Bearings merch at shop.wheelbearings.media. Go check it out. That's shop.wheelbearings.media. All right. Well, Robbie. I think we've got an all Ford review section this week. So
all
what
Ford
did you drive?
All the time. Woo-hoo! I drove the Ford Explorer Tremor, which is a car. Well, it's not a car; it's an SUV. Okay, so the Ford Explorer it's a cop car, is what it is, and it's
it is the best selling cop car in America.
Yes. So it is a cop car. It is, as an SUV, it's fine. There's nothing like very exciting about the Ford Explorer. Like, it does the thing it's supposed to do. It feels very big when you're inside of it, which makes people feel safe, I guess. That's it. That's the Ford Explorer. But then they said, hey, you know what we should do? We should put a Tremor package on there. So now the car makes zero sense in my mind. they outfit it with an EcoBoost twin turbo 3-liter V6, has 400 horsepower, 450 pound feet of torque. It's still a big, heavy SUV, so yeah, it goes fast, but
but because it's heavy, it's not really that fast.
Yes, it's not really that fast. That's the crazy thing, is that you've made this very heavy truck quicker. Okay. Sure. It's got a little, you can just, a little bit of a growl, maybe, sort of, kind of, not really. That's, so you're not really getting much of a visceral feel out of it. Yeah, it's going to be quicker than the regular Ford Explorer. Cool. And then it's made for off-roading. I suppose, do I want to off-road something this big and heavy? I mean, it's
you know, it has some underbody protection. You know, it's got a couple of skid plates
and it's been raised like an inch or so. It's been, there's all these things that they've done to this vehicle. For a vehicle that really, no one was asked. I don't know, were people asking for the, like when I see the Tremor on, like, I'm like, okay, an F-150 Tremor, sure. The Maverick Tremor, why not? People want a small little truck they can go woo, have fun with. But then you're like, well, let's just put it on the Explorer, and I'm just like, wait, what?
Well, if anything, you know, the Explorer is actually going to be a lot more useful off road than a Maverick. You know, it's got more ground clearance, it's got more power. You know, the Maverick Tremor really isn't very useful off road.
Not really. But here's the thing: is that you're at, it's, this is not this car. This is a, I need a car to go to pick up groceries. I need a car to arrest people in. I need a car to go to Costco. I need a car. I need a car because I have 7 kids and like they all play soccer for some reason. And so I have to haul all these children everywhere and I have to shove all their soccer crap in the back of my, the back of my vehicle.
The thing is, if you have the Explorer Tremor and you have 7 kids, you're going to have to leave a couple of them behind anyway.
That's
because
true.
It's only got 6 seats.
Yeah. So you lose seats. It has the captain's chairs in the back, which is like, cool. I guess that's fancy. That's nice. It's like you look in the back, you're like, am I in a minivan? What's happening? That's why every time I look in the back of an SUV and it has captain's seats, I'm like, oh, I got the minivan package.
Well, you know, I think the thing is, you know, a lot of Americans like to give off the impression that they are adventurous and go out into the woods and do stuff. Even though they never actually do.
We are like Boy Scouts. We are always prepared for a thing that we probably won't do.
Do not need to ever be prepared.
I see a lot of raised trucks that have zero mud on them. I do see some that are just filthy. And I'm like, good for you. Good for you. But then I see a lot of them are just like, these are just glimmering, shiny, clean. I raise my truck because at some point, I'm going to do some cool off-roading. Or they just raise it because they think it looks cool. I think it's mostly that, to be honest.
Well, especially because many of those raised trucks have these low-profile tires on there.
Yeah,
so you can't actually take them off-road. They're just going to sit there and spin all 4 wheels.
I'm not sure what those are about. But you do you, I guess. You know what's crazy? That this is this is not a cheap vehicle. But it's the first vehicle I've gotten into in a while that isn't like an entry level sort of like price range that doesn't have a wireless charger. I was confused by that. It has all these little cubbies to put things in and has rubber for the cubbies.
Well, there's that
which
little
I appreciate.
Shelf.
Yeah, there's two little shelves. There's like a shelf and then there's like a little hole where the USB port is. But, you know, both of them have like rubberized. So when you put things in, they're less likely to go shooting out, which I appreciate. Neither of them have wire. I was like, oh, this is where the wireless charging is. And I just kept moving my phone around. I'm like, I guess this isn't. And then I stuck it down in the little hole. And I'm like, nope. And then I looked and I'm like, oh, this thing doesn't have wireless charging, which is like, okay, fine. But like, I remember one of the places that does surveys, like one of the number one things people want from the cars now is wireless charging. People don't want cables, apparently. They just want to stick their phone down, have it charge, and just go and do whatever they have to do, which I understand. You know, it does have CarPlay and Apple Auto, Android Auto, not Apple Auto. That'd be weird. And the seats are, you know, the seats are pretty comfy. They're kind of like a velvet, like suede or something. Like, I do like the cloth like on the seats. That was really nice. Yeah. I really enjoyed that. I've called this car like the Sugar Ray of Explorers because it keeps having the little yellow, what do you call it, on there. So it has like, frosted tips?
Little accents.
It has little accents. So it's the Sugar Ray of Explorers. Like, it used to be, like, at one point you're like, oh, this is kind of, oh, all right.
Well, you get those orange pockets in the in each of the wheels. So, like, you know, the alloy wheels on this thing, you know, they have like five pockets in them, and one is painted orange.
Yeah. Woo, and it has orange stitching everywhere.
And that, you know, that's so you know where the valve stem is if you need to put air in the tires.
Which is helpful, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you did that with all cars, I'm like, oh, that's just great. Instead of like me looking in a circle twice for some reason, I'm valving the valve stem. Yeah, overall, it says, what is it, their EPA, 19 combined, 17 city, 22 highway. I got like 17. Mid to high 17. It's not sipping gas, as I can tell you that, with that twin turbo V6. It's just gulping it down. I had the Outback. Was that last week, I believe?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And to me, that just felt more, it felt like that was a bit ready for going off-road than this. The problem I have with some of these packages is that they try to make the interior really nice. Here's an off-road package. Now we're going to make the interior nice. And you're like, what are you doing? Have you been off-road? They did have like rubber.
Yeah, it had really nice rubber floor mats in it.
Oh, yeah. I love rubber floor mats. I don't know why we put carpet in any car that's not a luxury car. It's dumb as far as I'm concerned. What are we doing? Why are we putting carpet in something that we just, the messiest time our shoes are, we're going to sit in there. I do drive without my shoes on in the summer. Like I actually grip the clutch and with my toes. Like a monkey. But even then, like, you know, when I had my WRX, I had the rubber things, and they were fine. So yeah, if you love a Ford Explorer, which again, it's a totally fine car. It's not exciting. There's nothing exciting about a Ford Explorer. It doesn't have to be exciting. And then Ford was like, let's make it exciting. And they're like, but why? I'm curious how many people are buying it. How many people are like, I need a pretty meh car. It's not a bad car. It's fine. It does all the things you want to do. I want a pretty meh car, but I want you to make it quicker. I want you to raise it. I want you to put expensive tires that'll just get run down on the street. And I want you to sell it to me for an additional like $12,000 or something ridiculous.
Just because.
Just because. Anyway, so how did you feel about the Ford Explorer?
Yeah, so, you know, if people haven't figured it out yet, I also had the Explorer Tremor this past week. I pretty much agree with everything you said. We went out to the lake one day, took Morty and threw the paddleboard in the back there and went out to the lake and spent a few hours out there paddling around and enjoying it, and, you know, put a seat cover, you know, straddled across the two captain's chairs in the second row, and then strap Morty in there. But yeah, you know, you've got that shelf there underneath the infotainment screen. It would be a perfect place. You could put two wireless chargers in there. There's enough room for two chargers, because I had my phone in there. My wife put her phone down on that shelf. There's plenty of room for two good sized phones that you could be charging wirelessly.
It's for
$65,000. Come on, Ford.
Yeah, you're paying a lot of money for something that's in, like, that was in the Outback. They had it in the Outback.
So I did take it, you know, on a dirt road, you know, the last stretch of the way down to the lake that we hang out at. You know, it had some bumps and stuff in it. And, you know, but for a vehicle that is nominally supposed to be an off-road version of the Explorer, typically, you know, for an off-road vehicle, you want the suspension to be a little more compliant, you know, so that when you go over bumps and rocks and stuff, the wheels can actually move up and down and, you know, get over this stuff. And it was actually quite stiff feeling and not very comfortable to drive even on the road. You know, it was kind of bouncing around a little. So it didn't really feel very off-road capable. But, you know, like I said, we took it down the dirt trail down to the lake. And then I did take it to go to Tractor Supply to buy another cow panel that we use for a trellis for the melons that were growing. So, you know, I managed to squeeze, you know, an 8-foot cow panel in there. I couldn't get the tailgate closed with the cowl panel in there. So the tailgate was just bungeed down. But, you know, diagonally, I could put a 50-inch wide cowl panel through the opening in the back. So, you know, it's got a decent amount of room in there. I think if I was in the market for a 3-row family hauler, you know, my first choice, you know, if I was hauling around a bunch of kids, would obviously be a minivan. That's obviously the superior choice.
Yeah.
But, you know, if someone in the family insisted that, you know, a minivan is absolutely verboten, you know, and you had to have some sort of SUV-like vehicle, this would be, like you say, it'd be okay, but it wouldn't be my first choice. You know, I would take, you know, a Palisade or a Telluride over this.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You feel very sort of cut off from the world when you're in this vehicle.
Yeah.
I felt like I was like, okay, I'm in this big, it feels very, I'm inside a giant, like, metal pillow.
Yeah.
I feel very not part of what's happening outside the rest of the world.
I did go out and do some highway driving with the Blue Cruise to try out, you know, because it's got the latest version of Blue Cruise on there. And, you know, it's the same version I tried probably almost a year ago now in the Mach-E Rally. So I think it's version 1.5. And, you know, it does work much better than prior versions of Blue Cruise. You know, there's a couple of curves in the highway on the west side of Ann Arbor that Blue Cruise always used to give up and just say, put your hands back on the wheel. And it handles those fine now without having to grab the wheel. But when you're in a situation where you do have to have your hands on the wheel, then it still has that problem that all Ford vehicles of the last half dozen years have had, because Ford still will not put capacitor sensors in their steering wheels. So they don't really know if your hands are on the wheel. And so if you're holding the wheel steady going down the highway, you know, every couple of minutes it'll say, please put your hands back on the wheel. And, you know, then it'll, if you don't actually move the wheel, it'll, you know, say, you know, please jiggle the wheel a little bit so I know that you're still there. It's like, come on. I mean, you know, this is a no-brainer.
It's a lot of money for the things that should be in a car that cost this much money, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I've not been a fan of the Tremor, like, just shove a sticker on. I mean, paint that thing on. Come on.
Yeah.
Paint. I don't like I like all the accents. I'm like, oh, those are cool. But then you're like, either put a badge on it or put some paint on it. The sort of, hey, we just shoved the sticker on there. I'm like, oh, you're like, you got so close. And then you drop the ball at the end.
It actually has a Tremor badge. It's not a sticker.
Oh, you're right. It does have the badge. Never mind.
Yeah.
It was the other Tremors. All right. Good job.
Yeah. So they got that part right.
Now that I remember, I'm like, oh, okay, sorry. I just I just got in the car and I was just like, oh. Hmm.
And the third row seats are power folding, so there's a couple of buttons in the back that, you know, you can put the seats put them back up. So that's you know, helpful if you need that extra space. But yeah, you know, it's not very fuel efficient, like you said. You know, I got about 18 miles per gallon with it, and it's, you know, it doesn't ride very well. Mine at least had a color to it, which they...
Yeah, mine was white.
Yeah, they call... The one on mine, they call it marsh gray, but it's actually more like a tan color.
That's fine. You can get dirty, no one will know.
Yeah. You know, it'll fit right in with the sand dunes, you know, trying to hide it. Nicole, you want to guess at the destination charge?
We're going to go 2,700. I'm going to do what the other one was.
A little bit over.
Yeah.
That's only...
I got 1,695.
Well, yes, you win. You win by default.
You win because, like, yeah.
Hey, I'm going to win. No matter what, I win $1 million. Do I still win?
Yeah. Yeah.
I got...
So that's the Ford Explorer Tremor. It's okay.
I just got the Trax in, the Chevy Trax, and I'll talk more about it next week. But I'm like, oh, this is way more fun.
Yeah.
And I know you get in, you know, like, it's just going to be a cheap Chevy. And I'm like, that's exactly what it needs to be.
And it costs one third as much as this Explorer.
Yeah, it's very weird when this. Sometimes you're like, oh, look at this. Oh. And then you get in like a cheap car that's made with like leftover parts. And you're like, this is rad.
All right. Let's move on. So, Nicole, you had a diesel engine in that F-350.
Yeah.
But diesels are they're starting to shrink. They're losing their appeal in the market, especially in Europe, where, you know, not so long ago, you know, prior to 2015, you know, diesels were accounted for half the market in Europe, and in some countries in Europe, it was, you know, significantly over that. I think in Italy at one point they were up to about 80% diesel penetration.
Oh yeah, it's crazy,
kind of nuts. Now, you know, one of the first mainstream cars with a diesel engine was the Volkswagen Golf back in the mid-1970s. And they're winding down Golf diesels. They've already pulled it out of the market in the UK, and it'll probably be going away in other European countries. So it's the end of the line for the VW Golf diesel, and you know, already a bunch of other VW models don't offer diesels anymore.
Goodbye, diesel.
I mean,
goodbye,
really that
automatic smoke screen whenever you slammed on the gas in the 90s.
Yeah.
My friend had one in high school. She had a Golf diesel, and she would stop if she stomped on the accelerator. It's just like boom, smoke screen. Like Batman.
Rolling coal from a Golf.
Yeah, yeah, she was Batman whenever.
But by the time we owned our Jetta diesel that we bought in 2010, it no longer did that because it had a particulate filter on there, and that, you know, at least the particulate filter was functional. The NOx filter not so much, but the particulate filter was functional, and of course, you know, that's why, you know, one of the reasons diesels are going away is because of Dieselgate, you know, because VW kind of cheated a little on emissions testing.
Cheated a little. It's so nice.
I've
been paid a few tens of billions of dollars in fines and had to buy back hundreds of thousands of cars. And
people went to jail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was looking up some data last week when I saw this. And according to ICCT, which was the organization that uncovered the whole Dieselgate thing, the International Council for Clean Transportation, diesel market share in Europe in 2017 across all of Europe was 44%. In 2024, it was down to 16% and dropping.
Yeah.
So, well, yeah. So it's the, and plus, you know, now, especially here in the US, you know, diesel is so much more expensive than gasoline. You know, even with the potential fuel efficiency savings, it's hard to make the case for buying a diesel.
Somebody wanted me to drive a diesel from San Francisco to LA with, it was like 600 miles of range. What was that? Was it Chevy? It doesn't matter.
Could be.
Anyway, the reason people in Europe were buying them was because they got, you know, they're efficient, their gas efficiency, you know, they got more miles per gallon, right, or per liter than a gas car. So that's why people would buy them. You had to pay a little bit of a premium at the offset, but then in the long run, now we got hybrids. So we're like, oh, we don't need diesel.
Yeah,
this is actually cleaner. And, you know, we have hybrids, we have EVs, we have PHEVs. Diesel's kind of like, it's only for big trucks that need to haul entire home, like Nicole usually does on her,
right,
on her weekends. Yep. But for some reason, she didn't do it this past weekend.
Not this last weekend.
She had the perfect opportunity, you know, with a F-350 dually diesel. Yeah. And missed
it.
Yeah.
Did either of you ever drive the F-150 diesel that they sold back starting in 2018?
No.
I don't think so. I doubt. Maybe. Probably not.
So, Ford launched a 3-liter diesel V6 in the F-150 in 2018. And, back in the late 2000s, all, you know, Stellantis, or, well, Ram, you know, still Dodge, actually, at the time, Dodge and GM and Ford were all planning to launch diesel engines in their light-duty trucks. Dodge, you know, was going to do their the 3 liter eco diesel that they, you know, and they eventually did that. Well, actually, at one point they were going to put, you know, the 5 liter Cummins diesel that went into the Nissan Titan for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was originally designed for the Dodge Ram. That was supposed to go into the Ram 1500. And then they canceled that program. Dodge canceled it when they were going through their bankruptcy. And then a few years later, they added the 3 liter eco diesel V6, which ultimately cost them a bunch of money in fines as well. And GM was working on a 4.5 liter diesel V8, which was a really cool engine. You know, it was packaged the same size as a small block V8, so they could have used it anywhere where they used the small block. That one got canceled during their bankruptcy process. And Ford was working on a 4.4 liter diesel V8, which got canceled from the F-150 program, but they did ultimately end up building that, but they used it in Europe in Range Rovers and Land Rover models. Oh. And they also had a 3 liter V6 diesel that they had in some of the Land Rover vehicles. And that one is the one, the V6 is the one they put in the F-150. And they sold it for about 3 years before they finally discontinued it. But this thing, I went to the launch drive for the F-150 diesel, and it was really fuel efficient. They were doing, during the drive program, they were doing a little competition. They had a drive loop that we could take one of these trucks out there and see what kind of fuel economy we could get out of it. It was about a 20-mile loop. You know, so I went around the loop a couple of times. The first time I just did it, you know, everything normal, just, you know, trying to drive efficiently, and came back and got like 31 miles per gallon with it. And then I tucked in the mirrors and did all kinds of crazy stuff the next time around, you know, coasting and, you know, putting it in neutral while it was going downhill. Got about almost 36 miles per gallon with it.
Wow.
Yeah. But yeah, that one you know, ultimately got canceled after just a few years because apparently they had a lot of reliability problems with that engine.
Yeah. I mean, it's new and one car and after some, yeah. I mean, you're gonna have, yeah, that's a, people will always be like, well, you know, I'm going to buy the first year. And they're like, well, do you want to? Is that what you want to do?
Probably not when they do something like that.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on. BMW. BMW had an event in Spartanburg last week at their factory down there where they build the X5 to unveil the next generation X5. And did you go there, Nicole, for that?
I did not. Okay. No, I was not there.
Okay. Well, they unveiled the all new X5. It's as usual, slightly bigger than the old X5, but they made the grill, the kidney grills a lot smaller, just like they did with the new iX3.
Dun, dun, dun.
And what do you think of the design of this new X5?
I mean, it just looks like the Neue class. So, you know,
yeah, bigger.
Bigger. Big Neue class. Oh, I just hurt my elbow.
I'm glad they just don't have the giant
kidney grill.
The giant grill is too much.
It's going to eat children as it drives over the street.
Now, but like they've gone the other way. Instead of making it like dominant, it's like, ooh, let's make it really tiny.
Yeah.
I like this better.
The interior is a lot like the new iX3. So it's got that same parallelogram shaped center display. It's also got a lot other things from the iX3, like the software controlled vents. So not great.
Why?
Why?
Why? Why? Why?
Why must you do this to us?
I know. They're launching with four different powertrains. So they've got an updated version of the 3 liter turbo six cylinder which is now like 395-ish horsepower, I think. And and that's a 48-volt mild hybrid. There's a plug-in hybrid version of that. There's a full battery electric iX5, which uses a lot of the Neue class hardware from the iX3. It's now 570 horsepower. It's got a cell-to-pack battery. They're also going to be doing a hydrogen fuel cell version of this, which, you know, maybe sure. Three people will buy.
I say, who? No one's buying those.
They always deal. BMW, Honda, Toyota, they're always going to have, hey, guys, we got a hydrogen one. Come on. Well, and then you can buy it where I live.
Yeah. Well, in Germany, there actually are more. And in other parts of Europe, there are more hydrogen fueling stations. There's a lot more fuel hydrogen stations in Europe than there are in the U.S. So there's a few hundred available. So you could conceivably buy the hydrogen iX5 in Germany and actually, you know, have it useful to you.
Korea is the same way. Except the government, like, mandated they have to put hydrogen stations everywhere. So, you know. So they have them. So, you know, Hyundai, Kia, their hydrogen stuff makes sense for them over there. Makes sense for me, again, if we live here. But I would rather just have an EV I can plug into my home. I don't have to go anywhere.
So what do you think of the new lights on this thing?
The little X? You know, Are we getting the X here? That was going to be my first question. I was just scrolling down this. You know, sometimes lighting is different in different places. Is this U.S. lighting or is this like?
Yes, they will have this in the U.S. However, apparently there is a switch, you know, in the infotainment. There's a setting where you can turn that off and have it just be a slash like it is on the iX3.
I mean,
it's cool that you can turn it off, but it's also like, hey, you got a little X. What'd you got?
I like the X. I'm all about the fancy lighting. I think when
it looks like it's like a cartoon and it's dyed. You know, the little X over their eyes when a cartoon dies. Yeah, it looks a little like that. It's like, oh, your BMW died.
It was probably not what they were going for, Robbie.
Maybe when the battery runs down.
There you go. Little tongue sticks out. But no, I liked it. I think it's fine. I think everyone, light signatures are sort of a big deal for a lot of these automakers at this point, because you got to figure out something, especially when you're making an SUV. They all look the exact same from the profile. You know, BMW has the kidney grill, but they want to do something else. I think you know, Rivian has the big weird oval.
Kia tries to do all those zigzaggy, lightningy star map.
Yeah, Kia's got like every car is a little bit different from the other ones. So you never know what you're doing.
Kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So, one
of the complaints I've heard about the X is that it's the same as the logo for the site that used to be known as Twitter.
Yeah, but that's just the Unicode X. That's not even like, it's not like they paid someone to make
that.
Yeah,
but most people don't know that. They see it and they think of, you know,
former Twitter. I mean, I guess, sure.
Okay.
It's, you know, whatever. It's still Unicode X. Who cares? Yeah. it's just a letter X. It's not like Twitter paid anyone to do anything.
No,
someone just
true.
Went in and put X, and then they went to the fonts, and they're like, oh, this one looks cool. The end.
So speaking of Kia, which you just mentioned, the Niro is getting a refresh for model year 27. You know, it's getting kind of a lightning bolt style lighting setup on there.
As it should.
Yeah,
it does. Like a baby lightning bolt, because it's a baby car.
Yeah, it's kind of like the K4.
Yeah,
kind of like the lights on the K4.
It is a little bit. I would agree.
Yeah, but they're also simplifying the lineup. So they're dropping the EV and the plug-in hybrid versions of the Niro. And just keeping the hybrid. So it's going to be available only as a hybrid for 2027.
You know, I find that's interesting is there was that moment where everybody was trying so hard to have everything. We're going to have EVs, but then we're going to have a plug-in hybrid. We're going to have a hybrid. And the gas is just going to hang around until we kick it to the curb because gas is the way of the past. And now they're all realizing, like, we don't need four different powertrains for every single vehicle we have. How about we pick what works best? And I think it makes sense that they're changing it up and just doing a hybrid.
Especially with the plug-in hybrids, they're more complex. And to be honest, no one buys them. If you look at the BEV versus PHEV like sales numbers,
oh yeah, like it's like 1/5
EVs
of BEV sales
are like killing it. And then people are like, no, but PHEVs, you know, plug-in hybrids are the future. Everyone's going to get it because no one buys plug-in.
Yeah, really. It doesn't. It for a million reasons, it doesn't make sense. Like if you just want, like, just get a regular hybrid. You don't get or go full EV. Like. Make a decision. And I say that having a plug-in hybrid. Yeah. We got it because that was what Russ wanted. But I don't think I would buy a PHEV, probably. I would just go with a hybrid.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I think some people are buying it, but not really.
Mm-hmm.
It's been near an automaker, like, especially now, because the whole industry is contracting. I know people are like, well, they're not selling as many EVs. I'm like, they're not selling as many as anything. So
nothing's
doing great, to be honest. So if you're an automaker, you got to like look at your lineup and be like, okay, what's not doing great? I mean, the Niro was like bumping up against other vehicles, and they're like, okay, let's stop, let's stop being our own worst, our own worst enemy in the EV space with this, and let's just make this hybrid and be done.
Yeah, well, speaking of, you know, stuff selling less, last week, you know, it was the beginning of the month, and, automakers, and because it was also the end of the quarter, you know, all the automakers reported their sales, and it was, when I looked at the Ford sales release, clearly, whoever wrote the headline for this release did not actually read the rest of the release or read the numbers.
Oh, no.
Yeah, the headline on Ford's June sales release says Ford large SUVs and F-Series lead first half growth. Maverick Hybrid and Bronco set records. So if you scroll down in that sales release to where they actually have the sales numbers, you know, said first half growth in that headline. Ford's overall sales year to date, for the second quarter, we're down 10.3%. So where's the growth? And large trucks, you know, F-Series, was down 11%. It's down 13% overall since the beginning of the year. And the Expedition, down 27%. So how exactly are those leading growth for Ford?
I was going to try to come up with like a reason why, like, well, you know, one thing was doing, you know, there was like, I don't know, just write whatever. Yeah. The whole, I mean, if you look, like, no one's having a good time in the automotive industry. If you know, you can sit there and say, well, you know, this person, no, everyone's
except Hyundai and Kia.
Well, except, well,
Hyundai and Kia are growing.
So Hyundai and Kia are growing. Everyone else is not doing so great, or they're keeping it going. It's a hard time, you know. People don't have as much money, these big cash cow, like, you know, giant trucks, people can't afford $1,000 a month,
Well, I think I just saw something. The average monthly car payment now in the U.S. is $777.
Really?
Which is crazy.
But Jesus,
like, we don't pay that much. That's average, which means a lot of people are paying above that.
Wow. I think last fall, I saw that over 20% of monthly car payments are over $1,000 a month now.
That's so much money.
Over $1,000 a month. That's a lot of money on a car.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you need
to buy a less expensive car.
Good luck.
You need to buy a less expensive car. Yeah, but I think people just go, you know, you get there and you look and you think you need more car than you do.
They look at that F-350 Dually King Ranch and think, I got to have that truck.
Mm-hmm. Got to have it.
That's exactly what it is. But, don't do that to yourselves, people. Don't spend too much. Don't overspend on your car. I know it's really tempting, super tempting. We all do it. We all look and go, wow, that'd be cool. But also, I need to put food on the table. So don't overspend on your car. Oh, gosh.
Especially for something that is going to be worth less.
Exactly.
In the not-too-distant future.
It's not a Picasso.
Yeah.
It's not a Ferrari. It's not a house.
It's a car. It's gonna lose money. You gotta think about it in the long term, like, okay, well, in 5 years when I'm still paying off this car. And they have incredibly long, you know, payment plans now, and it's just like, ooh.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are getting 7-year, 8-year loans for cars, which again, that's crazy.
We have a 5-year on our Hyundai, but we already have a plan to pay it off quicker, because we're just like, okay, this is how much we're going to willing to pay per month, and then we're going to pay use this. Like we're like, we got to get, you know, because we know the longer the lease is, the more, or the, I'm sorry, the lease, the that is, you know, the more we're just paying in interest and blah, blah, blah. And we, you know, so we just sort of buckle down and decide, okay, this month we're going to throw a couple hundred dollars more at the, you know, every few months we throw, you know, at least a couple hundred dollars at the car. Just so we don't, so yeah, because we didn't buy a car that has $1,000,
yeah,
to be $1,000 a month.
You can manage to throw another 100 or 200 bucks at it, you know, every couple of months.
Yeah, yeah. So that's sort of, you know, save up money for a down payment, throw as much money as you can at it, try to get it off your, you know, your.
And ideally, you know, if you can save up enough money to buy it in cash, you know, which,
oh, that's, you know, the deal. But
that's
cars
the best
are so
way.
Expensive.
Especially because interest rates are so high now. And especially on used cars. I mean, on new cars, you can, you know, interest rates are higher than they have been. But, you know, you can find, you know, loans for, you know, 6 or 7%, which is still very high. But, you know, on used cars, I think the, you know, average loan rates are, you know, well over 10%. It's like 11 or 12, 13%, you know, and a lot of people are paying a lot more than that.
I mean, the only reason I can buy the Slate is because I have the BRZ.
Yeah.
I can sell my BRZ. I can, you know, save up money and then get the Slate. So the actual loan of the car is like maybe $5,000, maybe. So anyway, that's been your monthly, hey, maybe don't buy things that are so expensive that they're so crazy.
Yeah.
Keep it.
Or, you know, if. No, I'm not going to say what I was about to say.
Is it about stealing Teslas?
No, Tesla batteries, actually. Apparently, there has been a ring of thieves that have been stealing trailer loads of Tesla batteries from the Tesla Panasonic battery factory in Sparks, Nevada. They have stolen nearly a dozen trailers full of battery packs in recent months. At least 11 times now they have stolen full trailers of batteries.
Wow.
At this article in Inside EVs, it says the thefts reportedly occurred at the Gigafactory in Sparks, Nevada. Rather than break into the facility and load up a truck themselves, the thieves targeted the logistics side of the business and simply drove off with the batteries after social engineering their way into Tesla's somewhat secure shipping area.
Somewhat secure. It's a little secure.
Somewhat. Sort of. Hey, I'm here to pick up those batteries. All right. That's it. That's all you you show up. You got a clipboard. You got a truck.
Pull up with a tractor. You know, hook up a trailer. And off you go. The first thefts occurred in December when they drove off with two trailers full of Tesla Powerwalls, valued at $475,000.
Wow. That's a lot.
Yeah.
What's funny is they can, like, brick them, essentially, to keep them from turning on. It's like iPhones. Like, you can, you know, whenever you see an iPhone for sale, like, hey, used iPhone, maybe it works. You're like, don't buy that. Because if someone's account's on it and that person isn't available, you just bought yourself a nice brick. It's a flashlight that you can walk around your house with.
Yeah.
That's the same thing with they're sort of, you know, unless they're taking them apart and they're using them for resto mods, I guess, throwing the batteries in a resto mod.
You never know.
Seems like a lot of work.
Yeah.
And some, yeah.
But the, you know, yeah, because, you know, these are all, you know, remote controlled, Wi-Fi controlled. And you know, they can, when you hook them up, you know, you connect it to your Wi-Fi and then, you know, it can go out to to Tesla's servers and get firmware updates and stuff. So if they know it's been stolen, you know, just like an iPhone or a lot of other phones now, they'll check the serial number and say, oh, this was one of the stolen battery packs, and they'll just shut it down.
So much work for stealing. I mean, do some homework if you're going to be a thief. Come on. Come on.
Well, I mean, as we know, most thieves, not that smart.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, we're going to get these power walls, and then we'll have, you know, unless they have like a whole system where they're taking these apart and they're taking the battery modules out and they're putting them in other things. You're just, I don't know what you're. Good job. Why?
So Jalopnik had one of their listicles the other day, you know, where they put out a question to readers and, get the results and publish that as a listicle. And this one was readers coming up with honest auto company slogans.
This was funny. I laughed reading through these. Some of them are so painfully accurate.
The first one was for Dodge. Forget the alimony payment. You need a Hemi. Every law is only a suggestion.
Oh, Dodge.
The Ford one I liked was Ford slogan recalled.
Well, there was also the one, we love our cars so much we call them back every day.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you miss them.
Quality is a job, just not ours.
Just not ours. Oh, poor Ford.
Poor Ford.
So many recalls.
There's and been a lot of recalls.
Jaguar, we do hope you enjoy your loaner. Mazda, when you want to show you know cars better than your neighbor, but you can't afford a Porsche.
Yeah, that's pretty, yeah.
Kia, you can always trade up later. I think that one's a little unfair to Kia these days.
That's a little harsh because I actually like Kia.
Yeah. I feel like that's like 10-year-old, Kia from 10 years ago.
Yes.
Yeah. Nissan, we accept combined credit scores.
Yeah.
And then for the Nissan Altima, infotainment comes pre-programmed with GPS located bail bondsman near you.
Is the Altima like a thief car? That one sort of went over my head.
I don't know.
I like the poor little Mitsubishi, which is also the last one on this list. Mitsubishi, we're still here, and we're just as surprised as you are.
The Stellantis one is pretty good. We've tried nothing, and we're still out of ideas.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Ouch.
So you can check the show notes for the link and read them all yourself. Although the Slate one, this is a truck for things.
Check out a Slate.auto for accessory words to customize your slogan. That's it. It is a Slate. This is a truck for things. What are you going to do? Things.
Stuff. I'm going to do stuff. I don't know what stuff I'm going to do, but I'm going to do stuff. Yeah.
All right. California. After the federal tax incentives were killed last year, California promised to bring back their own state incentives, and they're apparently close to finalizing a bill that would do that. This one, it's going to be point of sale rebate, like the federal incentives were, and it would provide up to $3,500 for first-time EV buyers. So if you already own an EV, you're out of luck. But
you know, our EVs have all been in my wife's name.
Oh.
Bum, bum, bum. I don't know how that works with we're married, though. So.
That's worth a shot.
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah.
Maybe you can get $3,500 bucks off the slate.
I know. Slate's getting cheaper and cheaper every day.
Yeah. Credit for used cars, used EVs, which I think it was $1,750 for used EVs. I can't see it here now.
They don't have a number yet.
Yeah. And there's also a price cap. So for the new EVs, they have to have a sticker price less than $50,000, and the used ones can't be over $25,000. So
that makes sense.
Yeah. No, I think those are reasonable criteria.
If you're buying a luxury EV, you're doing fine. You don't.
Yeah, you don't need a tax break.
You don't
for
need that.
That.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're buying a Lucid or you know, a Rivian R1, yeah, you don't need a tax break.
You're doing just fine, buddy.
Yeah. Let's see, and what else we got here? Oh, also, you know, if you don't live in California and you want to get a deal on an EV, Polestar is having a closeout sale. They've got the big yellow and black signs on the stores.
Woo!
Now.
Everything must go. Spirit Halloween coming soon.
$25,000 off on the Polestar 3 and the Polestar 4. So
I like the Polestar 2, though.
Yeah, I don't know how many of those they have left.
Probably none.
Because I think they stopped importing those last year, so they may be all gone.
Boo.
So the remaining threes and fours you can get $25,000 off. As we talked about last week, they've promised to keep supporting those for the foreseeable future. And my guess is that, you know, if and when, you know, the Polestar stores, you know, do finally end up closing up shop, they will probably offer support through Volvo dealers.
Yeah, they're just fancy Volvos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, and they're still making the cars. The company's still in business. It's not going the route of Fisker. All the stuff is going to be there, just not here.
They'll still be able to get parts because they're still making the Polestar 3 and 4. They're just not going to sell them in this country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So the Ferrari hasn't sold a car with a manual transmission in quite a few years. But they just announced possibly as, to try and pacify their customers, you know, after the love-in for the Luce, that they're going to offer a quote-unquote manual in the 12-cylindry, which is their V12-powered GT. It's sort of a manual. It's got a gated shifter. So the 12-cylindry has an 8-speed dual-clutch transmission, and they're putting a gated shifter in this thing and a clutch pedal.
It's not even like
the Hyundai Ioniq 5N. You know, where it simulates the shifts and you do it with the paddles. There's no paddles in this thing. There's no shift paddles at all. There's just the shifter down where it belongs. And the clutch pedal is not actually mechanically connected to the clutch. It's just a switch. So when you press the clutch pedal down and you move the gated shifter, then it is then controlling the dual clutch transmission. And apparently you can even stall this thing. You know, if you don't give it enough revs and you let off the clutch too fast, it'll stall. They're trying to make it as authentic feeling as possible.
Okay.
Without putting an actual transmission in, manual transmission in, which people would just melt.
Yeah.
It's absolutely melt. The thing is, if you have enough money to buy a car like this, typically you're not a very good driver.
Yeah. And you probably have no idea how to use an actual manual transmission.
I have passed Ferraris going to like owners events, and I used to pass them on the back roads in Tehachapi, and my 90 Honda Civic with 86 horsepower. I've been stuck behind, 911 GT3s and a BMW i7 on Angeles Crest Highway. The i7, the boat.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, what are you doing? What's happening? If you are rich and you buy a fancy car, I want you to go to the track. I don't want you to take a class. I don't want the person to teach you how to drive your fancy car. Because we recently had someone die in a fancy car because they just didn't know what they were doing, unfortunately. So be self-aware is all I'm saying.
Yeah. Find your nearest racetrack, because, most racetracks have driving schools.
Mm-hmm.
If you can afford something, like a Ferrari 12-cylindry, go to Phoenix and go to the Radford School, or go to Skip Barber, or, some good driving school, where they will teach you how to operate these things.
And then if it's a nearby track, you can like sign up, you can do autocross events, you can do all the fun events where you actually get to drive your car the way it's supposed to be driven versus sitting on the 405.
And the traffic, where they teach you how to drive it at the classes, when you sign up at like local places where they have instructors and things that come around, they're really good. Like, you will learn a lot. You will think you're good, and then they'll teach you things. And if you do it more than once, and why the heck not, if you've got that kind of car or you're about to buy one, and they will really teach you what you need to know to not wrap yourself around a tree.
Yeah. And they'll teach you how to have fun in your car driving slow, which is what you're going to be doing all the time anyway on regular roads. They will teach you how to turn, how to enter and exit corners correctly. All the little things that you end up like, oh, I'm driving like 20 miles an hour on this back road, but I can still practice and still do these things that make driving fun.
Exactly. There we go. Don't spend too much on a car, and if you can't afford it, and make sure you know how to drive it.
Yes. All right, and the last item on the list today Toyota is moving the Tacoma back to Texas. So they used to build the Tacoma at their San Antonio assembly plant, where they also build the Tundra and Sequoia. And since 2022, they moved all the production to a plant in Mexico. So they have not built Tacomas in the U.S. for several years now. But they announced yesterday that they're going to be investing $3.6 billion in their San Antonio plant to expand it and add a new assembly line to build the Tacoma there. And should be up and running by 2030, adding 2,000 jobs there. So it kind of makes sense for them to do that, because, the Tacoma is not a cheap vehicle anyway. I was looking it up. 91% of Tacoma sales are in the United States, because basically, they sell some in Canada, they sell a few, and they sell about 10,000 a year in Mexico, but 277,000 Tacomas sold in the U.S. last year out of about 300,000 total.
Half of those in Hawaii. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
But it's a lot. If you've ever been to Hawaii, you'd be like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Is Toyota sponsoring these islands?
It's funny. When we went to Hawaii a couple of years ago, when they did the Grand Highlander drive and they did the reveal of the current gen Tacoma, one of the things they talked about was that the Tacoma has been the best-selling vehicle in Hawaii for like 25 years.
It's the rest of the
country, it's the F-150. In Hawaii, it's the Tacoma.
No, it's all Tacoma all the time. And then a lot of them are lifted. And if you've driven around Hawaii, once you go off to, like, if you've been there a bunch of times and you start sort of exploring more, you realize, like, oh, yeah, this is why. Because there are some crazy roads where it's like, hey, family's big, it's a big deal in Hawaii. Everyone's like, hey, let's go to this place where the tourists aren't and have a nice like picnic or, go surfing or whatever. And those roads are typically insane. So you need to race Tacoma. These are the people who are actually raising their trucks and doing the things that you're supposed to be raising your trucks do with your raised trucks.
Yes.
So, it's funny. I was looking up the data yesterday or today on the Tacoma sales. And like I said, they sold about 10,000 last year in Mexico, where they build them. Out of the 300,000 they built, 10,000 were sold in Mexico. The Hilux is the one that actually sells much more in Mexico. And you can't get the Hilux here, but they sold about 20,000 Hiluxes in Mexico last year. So it's much more popular than the Tacoma, probably because it's a lot less expensive.
Yeah, it's not very expensive, yeah.
All right. So that is all the stories we've got for this week. This morning I did, an interview with Christopher Myvold, who is the founder and CEO of Lectron. And I don't know, have either of you two ever used Lectron chargers?
Probably, without our knowledge.
Exactly. Unbeknownst to me, yes.
It's like ChargePoint. Like, people don't realize ChargePoint is partnered with, like, Mercedes and all these other places. And then Lectron is, like, works with ChargePoint. It's like, yeah.
Lectron doesn't build Level 3 chargers. They don't build DC chargers. They build Level 1 and Level 2 chargers for home and some commercial use as well for the Level 2s. But they also build a lot of the adapters. And, one of the things he was saying is that right now about 1 in 5 EV owners in North America have used Lectron equipment. If it's not one of their chargers, it's probably one of their adapters because they supply the adapters that are provided by Ford, General Motors, Honda, and several other OEMs. So, you know, they do NACS to CCS adapters. They do CCS to NACS adapters. They do NACS to J1772 adapters and J1772 to NACS adapters. So they make a lot of those adapters. So I had a chat with him this morning about what they're doing. And so we will run that right after we say goodbye. So stick around, listen to that, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
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 All right. So I am talking today with Christopher Myvold, who is the founder and CEO of Lectron, which if you have an EV, there's a decent chance you've probably heard of this company, especially if you have a charger at home. So, Christopher, welcome to Wheel Bearings. Let's start off with some background on yourself and Lectron and how you got into the charging business, the EV charging business.
Sure. Yeah. So, Lectron is a brand started in 2017. We started out in the automotive aftermarket, first on Amazon, then on various retailers, Home Depot, Lowe's, AutoZone, Best Buy. Continued serving customers through the aftermarket, and in the process of this, building more and more technical competence on the design and engineering. And in the past couple of years, we've also become a supplier to some of the world's leading OEMs. And, you know, across our aftermarket and our OEM business, we ran the number, and we think that one in five EV owners in North America has at least one Lectron product, which makes us very proud.
Yeah, I mean, when I first installed, I get, as part of my job, I get to drive a lot of and evaluate a lot of different plug-in vehicles, EVs and plug-in hybrids. And so several years ago, I installed an outlet in my garage for level two charging. And the first charger that I bought was actually Lectron charging cable that I bought from Amazon. And so I've been using Lectron for a number of years, and Lectron was also one of the first companies to introduce an aftermarket NACS to CCS charging adapter when the industry started making that transition a couple of years ago. And so you supply quite a few OEMs with a version of your adapters. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah. So we have a lot of OEM. The Vortex Plus that you refer to is a popular product, the automotive aftermarket, and also a lot of our OEM customers, Ford, Mercedes, BMW, and others, VW Group, are using a variation of our NACS to CCS adapter. But the underlying technology between industry-leading adapters and industry-leading chargers are the same, right? So it's best-in-class PCBA, electrical design, mechanical design, and obviously validating this for automotive requirements.
So recently, Lectron reached out to me to see if I wanted to evaluate your latest charging product. And this is a level two charger called the Nexus. You've been doing level two home chargers for a number of years now. Can you tell us a bit about the Nexus charger and how it varies from your previous products? What's new? What's different about this charger?
Yeah. So the Nexus charging station is a jump in quality. A ton of the learnings that we've made with our customers from the various OEM launches are now integrated in this generation of charging stations. The product has been designed following proper automotive processes, design failure mode analysis, process failure mode analysis, and all the validation learnings and quality learnings and process learnings from all of our OEM learnings have been packed into this. And it's an OEM-grade charging stations and aftermarket value. And we're very, very excited to bring this to customers.
So, okay, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in terms of what the product will come with, it will launch as a 40 amp or 48 amp version, either hardwired or with a NEMA 1450, with a J1772 or a NEX coupler. And in particular on the NACS coupler side of things, there's again a ton of the learnings that we've brought in from the adapter business. So adapters are governed by a standard called UL2252. This standard is the latest and greatest of what EV charging has to offer. Extremely stringent drop test, super precise silver nickel terminal coating. So really advanced stuff that actually exceeds some of the requirements of UL2251 that previously governed the adapters, governed couplers. And we're putting all of this together and are building our own couplers as well for the charging station and are bringing this to customers.
So what are some of the, you mentioned the things like a drop test, which obviously, is an important one for something like a charging connector. You know, if you drop the cable on the floor when you're unplugging it or whatever, you don't want it to crack open. But what are some of the other biggest challenges for chargers that you have to deal with? I guess primarily from a safety perspective is obviously, but also reliability.
Yeah, look, from a there's a ton of stuff. So it's not only one single thing. It's compliance with UL2251, compliance with 2231, 2594. So UL compliance is key there. Another thing to look out for are temperature rises. So there are temp sensors both in the outlet as well as on the PCBA and also in the coupler. So temperature rises through inadequately installed outlets or, some kind of failure get triggered and to ensure that the unit starts off safely and doesn't endanger customers. So that's one of the things that's really important on the safety side of things. On the engineering side of things, it's a 100 little things. We mentioned drop test on the coupler. That's really important. The IP rating is also key. A lot of the failure modes from charging stations, especially when they're installed outside, are water ingress. It rains for a couple of weeks at different temperatures. So the plastic compresses and expands. And at all of these times, you need to be prevent water from getting into the wall box and hurting the PCBA. So the charger itself is IP66 rated. The PCBA in the charger has conformal coating on top of it to ensure that even a little bit of moisture that gets on there won't actually hurt the electronics. So, there's a ton of little details that make this a best-in-class product.
So, with having two different versions of it, one with a CC or with a 1772 connector, the other with a J3400 or NACS connector on there, are there any, apart from the cable itself and the coupler, are there any other differences between those two versions of the charger?
No. So the underlying electronics are the same. The safety certificates are the same. Mm-hmm. A version that will come out in a couple of weeks that we would also love to send you is the Nexus Pro version that also has an app, load balancing, solar loading feature, and others. But the underlying platform will remain the same.
Okay. You mentioned that you started off selling on Amazon. You sold through a number of retailers. Now, is the Nexus charger going to be available across all those different retailers as well?
That's right. So at the moment, it's already available on Amazon and the website. And in the next couple of weeks, it's also going to roll out on Best Buy, Home Depot, AutoZone, and other key retailers.
One of the things I noticed when I unboxed the Nexus charger is the one that was sent to me was with the NACS connector on there, and compared to the previous chargers that I've used, the charging cable itself is quite a bit skinnier than the previous chargers that I've used. how were you able to make that cable slimmer? And does the 1772 version also have that slimmer cable on it?
Yeah. The question around cable slimness, I would need to ask one of our chief technology officer.
Okay.
We'll provide you a feedback on this in writing. Okay. I think this is a little bit too technical for me. But yes, the cable is thinner, and the cable is thinner despite having an additional temp sensor in the cable. So this runs from the coupler all the way to the PCBA. So it's slimmer and has additional safety features.
And then, you know, one of the other challenges around EV charging for many years now has been, from the safety perspective, you know, there's a communication component between the charger and the vehicle. You know, with a combustion engine, you put the fuel filler nozzle into the pipe in the car, and the gas just flows, or diesel just mm-hmm. flows. There's no real communication between the vehicle and a fuel pump. But with mm-hmm. an EV charger and an EV, there is communication because the EV has to, and the charger have to negotiate, you know, okay, how much charge can I accept? What is the state of charge? Knowing when to turn it off, when to start it, these sorts of things. Is the software that Electron uses, is that all developed in-house by Electron as well, or is that done? Do you work with third parties to do that, and how do you handle testing with different brands of vehicles?
Yeah, so a lot of the charging standards are the firmware, the logic, all of this stuff is developed in-house. The charging protocols are largely open source. So there is no difference between communicating with a GM or a Ford vehicle. We do conduct interoperability testing, but the whole point of standardization of, you know, J3400 or J1772 is that the charging protocols across vehicle platforms are the same.
Okay. And I think there was a video that you wanted to show us as well.
So one part of this is that it's really important to the design failure mode analysis. A ton of work goes into how to design the product, how to anticipate certain failures during usage, and make design decisions to prevent this. The second step is process failure mode analysis, right? During production, what can go wrong? What process mistakes can happen? How do you prevent those? And how do you, create a manufacturing process that is standardized, repeatable, and doesn't have any deviations. And the last step on that is obviously quality control, end-of-line testing, to ensure that every unit that does ship and is assembled is of the highest quality. And I'd like to say everything is easy unless you don't do it well. the same applies for charging technology, right? So it's relatively easy to build a mediocre, unsafe, or, not outstanding charger, but doing anything in the top 1% of the bell curve is hard. And we've brought a little video to show the detailed assembly of the product and how much thought and effort and process control goes into it. So the PCBAs of the charger are made on the same campus where the charging stations also get assembled. So the SMT line is there. This is probably a bit long. So the heart of the charger is the PCBA, right? So the electronic, the logic that flows through the machine. Once the PCBAs are made, they get shipped to the final production assembly line, just a couple of minutes from the SMT line. Right, then here you can see how they get first assembled in the box, in the wall box. So this is the outside of the wall box.
Okay.
Another thing you can see here is the little honeycomb design, right? In order to prevent, in order to give it structural integrity of the charging station and fast drop test, it's made of a very special material and honeycomb designed in order to ensure that it doesn't break. All the screwdrivers are fully torqued. And then the cable assembly gets checked by a camera that ensures that the cable assembly is correct. It gets put into a manufacturing execution system that then links the serial numbers of the charger.
Track all the production as you go along.
Sorry?
Yeah, so you can track each unit as it goes through the production process, and if anything comes up in your testing later, you can trace back to the source of where this, you know, in the production system where the problem occurred.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. So each unit has a serial number, each component is linked to a serial number, and there's also batch traceability. So this allows us to find failures fast. Then the assembly line works on semi-automated trails. So there's a once the operator installs the product, it moves through the production line and goes through various end of line tests on the trail. This is when the top of the wall box gets closed, again with fully torqued screwdrivers so you don't overscrew.
Mm-hmm.
In this part of the test, this is the IP rating test. So this gets put into a precision engineered part, and then air pressure gets applied. And depending on how much pressure leaves the gasket, you can tell just whether or not it's IP rated.
You're essentially doing leak testing on every device before it goes out.
That's right. And then at the very end, the product also gets put into an aging chamber where it gets aged at 50 degrees Celsius for 4 hours.
And what does that do?
It ensures that the product is operational and works at peak temperatures.
Okay.
Because the highest failure rate of a lot of products is that it's dead on arrival.
Mm-hmm.
So our products cannot be dead on arrival because they've been aged.
Okay. Great. Well, and is there anything else that you want to share about the Nexus charger or anything else that Electron's doing that listeners might be interested in before we finish up this part of the conversation?
Yeah, no, I think we're extremely excited about what we've built. Thanks for making time to let us explain this, right? So a ton of thought and effort goes into this, into the product design. And, we're grateful for journalists that take the time to understand the technical intricacies there and help educate customers what safe and sound charging solutions are. So thank you, Sam.
Yeah, I just thought there's one other question I had, which is related to bidirectional charging. It's an area that's growing a lot of automakers are increasingly making their vehicles bi-directional capable. Is that something that is in your product pipeline for the future, is to have chargers that can support bi-directional capability to allow vehicle to load or vehicle to home or vehicle to grid capability?
So we have we are building vehicle to load adapters for various automakers. There will also go. There are also going to be more vehicle to load adapters in the automotive aftermarket, coming soon. On the bidirectional charging station side, so we are working on a vehicle to home AC bidi charging system. But this is obviously related to the onboard charger architecture of the vehicles of our OEM customers as well.
Sure.
So we're working closely with them to ensure that our charging bidi charging system aligns with their OBC system infrastructure. We hope that something is going to come out in the near future. Let's see.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And hopefully we'll talk to you again soon. And I'm going to hit stop right now.